Hello folks, my name is Joshua. This is the ArtOfMoneySaving.com podcast. That means it's another Wednesday, it's another episode. You've got me for a solo episode this time, and we're talking about the slightly controversial issue of finance YouTubers and financial pornography. Bit of a strange term, but I will be defining it in just a moment. But before I start the episode, just thought I'd give you a wee update on what's been going on in my life. I just got back from a trip from Germany last night, so normally I would have published the episode Tuesday evening. There was no chance this week, so it's going out a little bit late, but still on a Wednesday. No chance to have a guest. If you are someone that'd like to come on the podcast, always feel free to get in touch. But let's crack on now and talk a little bit about YouTube and this idea of financial pornography. Now, this week has been an interesting one. Lots of stuff happening in the media, particularly standing out for me and a lot of us in the personal finance space is Elon Musk putting a Twitter poll asking the question, should I sell some of my shares? Which, yeah, an incredible thing to do. And I think this sums up financial pornography quite well. Now, on one hand, let's speak a little bit positively about it. Financial pornography can be helpful in that it raises awareness of all things finance. And it breaks out of the four walls that normally we exist in the personal finance space. I'm sure you've often found yourself talking about investing or the latest savings account, but no one's really interested. Financial pornography and big breaking news stories breaks out of that, and certainly the Elon Musk story this week went big, because it was a big, bold story, and it grabbed people's attention. Financial pornography, however, I think, is a catastrophe for our financial plan. Because we get so hyped up and super aware of the day-to-day movements in the market, or day-to-day financial movements, that just bear no importance to our overall long-term plan. And I'm going to spend the rest of the episode, I think, really talking about why I, first of all, and you should be thinking carefully about how you respond to these things. Money is money. It's a tool. Most of us have it, at least to some extent, some more than others. But that's not the end of the story, is it? The way in which we interact and deal with money, our behaviour around money, I've come to learn is one of the most crucial things. And it's variable. Gosh, our emotions can affect the way that we handle money, the way that we interact with it. And therefore, I think behaviour at the heart of managing your finances is one of the things to tap into most urgently before anything else. But companies are starting to embrace technology in a way that makes investing or managing your money much more easy, and that's to be celebrated. But does this always work in our favour? Now, I'm really interested in fintech, and I love the way that these apps make it super easy for you to deposit money to see how your portfolio is doing, and that is all really, really great stuff. But I've got a bone to pick with companies like Free Trade, Trading 212, or even Coinbase, in that their platform encourages us to trade as much as possible. Now, Coinbase, for example, that's the cryptocurrency, and I added, you know, tiny little bit of my money to cryptocurrency just to feel like I was included like everyone else. But they've sussed out that behavior is the key to keeping people hooked. And they'll tell you when Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency is at its all-time high. And it sends a push notification to your phone, which is just horrendous. because this is financial pornography at its finest. Why do you need to know when the market is at its peak? Why do you need to know when the movements of the daily market? You just don't. And the one reason that the companies do this is to get you to trade more, to sell, to buy into another project, whatever that is. And this is inherently a bad thing for managing your money. And the thing about weeks like this week that have just passed is it's so hard to escape. Elon Musk is everywhere. BBC News, Twitter, Facebook. Everywhere you turn, financial pornography is being thrown, shoved down your throat. And that is not what we want to achieve. So how do we manage, how do we navigate this pathway when it's just being constantly thrown in our faces? I think having a really secure financial plan is at the heart of this. And at least it means that when you're starting to have those push notifications, I'm going to actually check after this episode whether I can turn those things off, because it's just not helpful. Realizing that your financial plan is in place will at least be an anchor to these movements in the market. And it, you know, FOMO is the word, isn't it? Fear of missing out. And these apps, I think, promote that. But aside from that, I want to tap into a double whammy now in this case, and that's finance YouTubers and these apps together. So I don't think the apps in themselves are inherently bad. I think that they're really designed for the customer. I think they do a really good job of making a really fantastic way of seeing how your investment works in real time. That's a real positive. But if we take the heart of financial pornography, so short-term thinking, and we combine that with YouTube, which is the algorithm works in such a way which you always need to create something. If you want to build your channel, create material, just like a machine. And that inevitably means that creators are making things that people want to watch, and therefore that's all around the subject of what's happening in the news at that particular time. And I found that therefore we get into this circle, treacherous circle, where wherever you turn, you're just being fed with the very thing that could potentially harm your financial plan. I started to notice this a lot as someone that loves YouTube, and I love personal finance videos as well. I subscribe to a huge amount of great YouTubers, but I'm noticing that common theme that people are jumping on the latest news story. And that is just not helping me at all in my financial plan. And I want to be helped. If I'm listening to a podcast, if I'm listening to a YouTube video, I want someone to help me on my financial journey, not fuel something that's going to derail where I'm going with it. And it's only 12% of the UK population invested in the stock market in 2018. 12%. In 2018, 11,864 new tech companies opened up in the UK. So that's according to Kind Geek. Some of these tech companies would, of course, been stock trading companies, and they are appealing to that younger customer, making it completely fluid and easy to trade money from one account to the other, or one stock to the other. 74% of respondents in the survey reported that they got a buzz from seeing a return on their investment, while 35% and 31% said they were feeling satisfied and more secure, respectively. So if Coinbase, Free Trade, whatever it is, if these apps are feeding us with this endorphin, with this high that, oh, I made a gain, I'm doing this, then we're more likely to put more money into the stock market, perhaps. I guess that would be my guess, purely speculative. But more likely than not, this is going to want to make us tinker with our financial plan. And therefore, our financial plan isn't automated. It's based on emotion. It's based on what the market is doing. It's based on what Elon Musk has tweeted about. That is not a place where we want to be. And what I'm disappointed about with social media or with YouTube or whoever it is, I'm disappointed that we're allowing technology to get in the way of what we know is the best for us. But somehow we can't detach ourselves from what we know is best for us and what we do. Being human, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? So the challenge for you, the call to actions, how are you going to figure this out if people are screaming from the rooftops and saying, sell your Tesla stock, sell, 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 sell? What are you going to do? Are you going to listen to these people? Or are you going to have a solid financial plan that is going to stay the same regardless of what the market does, regardless of who tweets? But something fundamental, I feel, has changed since the pandemic when it comes to personal finance videos on YouTube. And I don't know whether anyone else is observing this, but I really, really am at the moment. And it's that when we think about pre-pandemic or even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was, people weren't speaking about money. People weren't speaking about their investment accounts. It wasn't a done thing. I feel that we've now moved into a period where it's becoming overcrowded. And everyone is also doing the same thing. If it were one trusted account or two people, and you thought, oh, I really want to follow their journey, I would be up for that. And people can tailor that to whatever their needs, and you can always subscribe and unsubscribe. However, when the whole space is bombarded with the very same type of videos, it becomes a kind of a whitewash and a blur that you don't really understand where people are on their journey and what the context is, and it's all gets mixed up. And this is something that I'm becoming increasingly concerned about and seeing on finance forums as well, that people are saying, if you're 28 years old or 45 and a half, how much do you have in your net worth and how far away are you from your FIRE goal, and so on, so on, so on. FIRE being financial independence, retire early for anyone listening in. And this is just really unhelpful. It takes away all of the variabilities that we have in life, different types of jobs, different types of hours work, different ages, different financial circumstances, and it breaks it down into one thing. And that one thing only is a number. And that's exactly the same with, you know, pushing crypto or pushing a particular stock. Someone has won, someone has lost. And if you've got in early or if you've got in late, it doesn't matter, because there can be a constant feeling that you are missing out on what's happening in the market. And there's no doubt about it that 2020 opened up the opportunity for people that have never invested to invest and to get started. And you know what? I think that's great. I really, really do. And they would have seen amazing gains as well. I have in my little free trade portfolio, you know, the gains are just incredibly insane. And when I compare those gains to what I've gained in my Vanguard investments, for example, the Vanguard looks tiny. And you would think it's illogical. Why would I invest in an ETF, you know, a fund like this, when I can get returns on individual stocks that far outweigh what I'm doing there? And this is where the potential danger becomes, because we can get big-headed. We start to think that we know it all, that we've done our research on the markets, and it's been such a great year and a half that nothing can possibly go wrong. And I think But this is the crux of the issue, actually. It'd be really interesting to see long term. And when I say long term, I'm thinking, you know, over a 5 to 10 year period, is we've got people that started in 2020 doing individual stocks and people investing in index funds. What is the trajectory going to be like? So are they still going to retain those gains up to a 10-year period? Or are things going to go a little bit wobbly? So, for example, you know, if the tech sector has a bit of a bubble-bursting moment, that could have a really bad effect on certain portfolios, particularly if you're only exposed to one area of stocks. In a bull market, so it's a market that accelerates very, very quickly, it feeds this feeling that, oh, this is exciting. The endorphins again, that everything's going well. I've made X amount of percent in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, whatever it is. And we get fueled with excitement. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for the excitement. I love a bit of excitement. It's great. But it's that excitement that can make the crash down all the more difficult. And I'm looking forward as someone that's just an automated investor to see how this pans out in 10 years' time, whether I'll look back at the pandemic and think, oh, you know, I wish I'd put more money in X, Y, or Z. Probably will. But that's the way our mind works, isn't it? Because we think in hindsight. It's very easy to think in hindsight, to think, oh, I would have made this decision, and this decision. To do it in that moment is another thing altogether. And so I think, look, sometimes things are against us. We've got a lot of overcrowded YouTube space of people commenting on the tiniest movements in the market, which can lead us to obsessive behavior, which can lead us then to being more irrational and want to change and fiddle with our financial plan. That's not helpful for us. So what can we do to overcome this? Well, I've been thinking about this a lot this week, and I started reading a new book, which perhaps has helped contribute to this conversation a little bit. Don't know. Emphatically, it has contributed to this conversation because I've had somewhat of an epiphany. And the title of the book is called Take Back Your Time. It's by Morgan Tyer. Identify your priorities, decrease stress, and increase productivity. Now, admittedly, one shouldn't do a book review when you're only part of the way through the book, but I'm enjoying it. I'm really, really enjoying that. I've been challenged about how I use my time. Now, time is a very interesting one for freelancers because your time is your own. That's one of the most difficult things to manage. The book, look, I bought this book a number of years ago, actually, and I was just looking for a music score of mine in a suitcase, and I picked it up. It's been there, sat there for many years. And I can remember buying it and thinking, oh, I must get around to reading it, and not. And I took it out of the suitcase and I thought, ooh, maybe now's a good time to read this book again. It is written by a Christian author, but at least up until now, it's not in your face. It's not overwhelming. It's very well balanced. It's talking about how to manage your time with occasional references to the Bible and to faith and going to church, but it's not overwhelming. So I think if you're not a Christian, I think this would be, you know, perfect read. It's no problem. Let me tell you about some of the things that have changed in my mind. And at the conclusion of chapter one, let me just turn there. She gives a list of 10 ways to clear clutter. And, you know, I've heard about these minimalism books and time managing, blah, 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 declutter. Yes, I've already done it. I've decluttered my life. I've thrown away a lot of old clothes. We don't live in a big apartment in London, so it was just something we had to do. So the author lists 10 ways to clear clutter. Not everything on the list was helpful for me, and I'd heard some of them before, but there was one thing which stood out to me, and I impacted it, or enacted it, I should say, very quickly. It's been effective. So let me share with you what that is in a moment, but I'll read the 10 things first of all. Firstly, use gift cards immediately and entirely. Secondly, don't take free product samples, brochures, menus, flyers, and so on. Well, that's a difficult one for me. I love taking free things. Thirdly, don't store music or movies you no longer listen to or watch. Four, clear the clutter from your car every time you get home. Phew. That's a difficult one. One I could certainly do a little bit better. Don't keep expired foods, beauty products, and medicines. That's something I do, medicines, actually, yeah. out-of-date medicines. Shred or toss receipts as soon as possible. Don't hang on to outdated or unused clothes, electronics, and toys. Cancel services you no longer use or benefit from. Don't sign up for newsletters and emails that don't bring you value. And lastly, and the thing that helped me most, was delete apps, messages, texts, photos, and contacts you no longer need. I was staring at my phone and I started to delete a whole host of things that I had never had the intention of using again. And it was quite liberating, actually. Very liberating indeed. But anyway, the clear your clutter chapter led on then to managing your schedule and time. And I will no doubt do some future episodes on this as I dig deeper into the book. But what became clear is that your time has to be full of purpose. And actually documenting your time is no bad idea either. So I kind of always hate when these books have these work little sections and you have to write down and monitor your behavior, because I just want to improve what they're saying and just get on with it. But being aware of how you use your time, first of all, is pretty important. And she talks about having the daily five. So if you were to think about your life, to have five tasks that you could sum up very, very quickly and efficiently of things that you have to do that will give you the purpose and satisfaction that you need every day, or maybe not even satisfaction, you just have to do them because of duty. And that was something that she used for her kids. I love that. What I then actually learnt by brainstorming these ideas was that I've been using my time on things that don't have a conclusion or don't have a logical conclusion. Where is the next step with those plans? And it's going to make me rejig my time, but also make me think carefully about the voices and opinions that I have coming into my own life, which is very topical when it comes to finances and weeks like this. So who have you been listening to this week, in a week that the markets were at record highs and Elon Musk was doing his thing? How is your time spent? Was your time spent on watching videos about Elon Musk or researching Tesla or I don't know, whatever it was? And how does that help your financial plan? If I'm to ask that question to myself, a lot of the stuff that I watch doesn't actually help me. It's just fun. And that's fine. You know, she says that you could schedule fun. What happens if you're misled? You think that you're spending that time productively when you're not. That behavior doesn't lead to anything. And if anything, it leads to you tinkering with your portfolio. So I want to link these two things together because I think they are interlinked. Financial pornography is the heart of our behavior around finance. And our behavior is fueled by how we manage our time. And I have not got these things right, and I'm on a mission to do a bit of a cleanup, do a bit of research about how best to move forward with these things, to make sure that I'm prioritizing in my life things which are going to help me or help other people figure out their finances, not just play into the noise. I feel like you've heard that point today. I've been labouring that point a lot. But it's a big one. I felt that it needed to be said. I think that's it for this week. I think I'm going to draw it at a conclusion there because I don't want to labour anymore. On a positive note, I did have a really lovely podcast review come in. And I'm always really, really thankful for those people that take the time to leave podcast review. So I'm going to read it out right now. Just to say a massive thank you. From Rachel342, and she says, lots of useful money tips, easy listen with lots of useful money tips, and food for thought. Thank you so much for that short and sweet review. See, it doesn't have to be a big long paragraph, it can be short and sweet. That's all for this week. Do keep in mind, we talked about investing today, we talked about Elon Musk, we talked about a various number of platforms. You do your own research, because that's the way it should be. This doesn't constitute as financial advice, and you should seek your own independent financial advice. See you next Wednesday. Ciao.